Hello, welcome to Pilgrim Pit Stop. I really appreciate you listening to this podcast. It's great to have you here. I'm recording this on Tuesday, the 21st of April, 2020. It's about 10:30, it was just gone 10:30 p.m. I'm sitting in my garden after another beautiful day of sunshine, and I'm sitting out here looking up at the stars. It's a really lovely, warm evening, clear skies overhead, and I can see so many stars above me right now. And I was told that there was a meteor shower happening. I think it was happening, you know, it's been happening the last sort of few nights, but apparently it's particularly visible tonight. And just in the 10 minutes or so that I've been sitting out here, I've seen a number of shooting stars, one really big visible shooting star. So amazing to see. I think especially at this moment, where we can get trapped in the 24/7 news cycles and constantly updating statistics and horror stories, it's good to be reminded sometimes of the vastness of creation. So I guess that's why I'm out here recording this intro. This is a really exciting podcast episode. I've basically just got a load of interviews with really brilliant people lined up. The last episode, there was quite a lot of me talking. So you'll be pleased to know that actually this episode, there's barely any of me talking, and just a lot of really cool people talking about following Jesus through this pandemic. The first conversation that I'm going to share with you, I recorded on Wednesday the 15th of April with my friend Chennai. Chennai is a wonderful woman of God. She's part of our community group at church, and I caught up with her over Zoom just to chat about life and what she's learning through this moment.
It's just it's depressing, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. But at the other side, you think, okay, it's only for a short period of time. We have to kill this thing, get rid of this whatever it is, and then we'll be back to normal. But you never know what is going to be normal.
Yeah.
How it's going to be like after, when they say lockdown is finished and we are back to normal now.
Chennai, what are you learning about following Christ through this?
It makes you, you know, there are some people, like, you have like some of your friends, and then they don't believe, and then something like this happens and they're like, so where is God? Where is Jesus in all this? And you're thinking, oh, no, Jesus is there. He knows what is going on. But we just have to stay strong, because I think God is in there, and maybe God wants us to, you know, we've been so busy with life, like wake up, go to work. It's just hustle after hustle. But then with this, it made people, like, families are together. They are together with their children, those who can, especially, you know, those people who don't work in the health service. They are at home, obviously. Those who don't work in supermarkets, they're at home with their kids, they're especially young parents. So for me, I think in a way it's comforting that it's making people stay together. Yes, young parents might think it's hard work to be with kids and doing homework and all that, but I think it's, in a way, it's good, because people are being, it's not, it's like being forced to be together in the same environment, but it's making people know that this is something more important as well. But at the flip side, it's so depressing. You wake up every day, it's in your mind that somebody has died. Mm. One, like this morning, I woke up, I went on my Facebook. There's another one of our sisters from Zimbabwe just passed away in Nottingham, and I'm thinking, all these people who are dying, they are young mothers, and it's so heartbreaking, but God knows why he's allowed the devil to just travel like this in, like, throughout the world and disturb us. There's a reason, obviously. I don't know. I really don't know what is going on.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to just be positive. Like, at the end of all this, yes, fair enough, a lot of people, lives are going to be lost, but it's going to make people more connected with the, you know, people are just going, like, yeah, for a good example is, I have an auntie that I last talked to in 2009. Today, this morning, she just called me. She's in Zimbabwe. It's like, oh, I just thought of you. Because of this, people are trying to get in contact with people that they'd last talked to years ago.
Yeah, so true, isn't it?
Like, checking on them.
That's really interesting. Yeah. What's the situation like in Zimbabwe?
don't get me started.
Okay.
It's what can I say? There's a lockdown, of course, but I think people are going in the markets, like the biggest market in Zimbabwe, in Harare city center, the Mbare Musika. They only had a shutdown for about 6 days, and people complained and said there are vegetables and all that, they need to sell them. And the other thing is, you can't, in Zimbabwe, our situation is completely different from here. Completely, we are world apart. Like, we are 100 years behind in Zimbabwe. There is no welfare money that somebody, if you stay at home, the government is going to help you. No, there's nothing like that. So everybody has to go out, and those people who sell stuff to their markets, they have to go and sell so that their kids have something to eat. So it in a way, it's like, I can't force somebody to be locked in if I know that they are going to be hungry with their kids. But the president is trying to make it look like he has asked people to go on a lockdown. Yes, of course, he did that, but it's just a way of making maybe the police to beat people around in the streets. When they see people, they just start beating people up. Mm. But I don't think he really cares about, I don't think they believe, because one of his ministers came out saying, it was like, you know, when you hear something and you think, is she saying this? Is somebody saying this? And then you think, no, maybe I'm dreaming. You'd pinch yourself. She said, it's so weird. She said, coronavirus, it's a disease created by the West. So it's not going to affect us. It's their disease. It's like, it's their disease. It doesn't have to anything to do with us. That was at the beginning of the month. And then suddenly, the first person who died came from New York, went to South Africa, and went to Zimbabwe, and 11 days later, he was dead. And that's when they started realizing that, because the man that died, is his dad is one of them. So they started getting all the equipment to start fixing hospitals. They are fixing hospitals for themselves, not for the civilians in Zimbabwe, no. It's for them. If I get sick, if I was in Zimbabwe, I've always told people, because of my condition, one doctor at the pain clinic asked me this question. He said, oh, you're from Zimbabwe. What do you think would have happened to you if this had happened when you are in Zimbabwe? I said, without even blinking my eyes, I said, I'll be dead by now. That's how the situation is. That's how bad it is. So with coronavirus, they're fixed in their own hospitals, their own posh hospitals. equipments, everything is being laid out in preparation. If one of the cabinet ministers or maybe the president catch coronavirus, then he goes in the hospital. But if me catch any civilian or anybody in the streets, if they catch coronavirus, they go to the Parerenyatwa hospital, which is like a dump. You have to see it to be, so that you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
I tell you, I can't even describe it. It's you have to see it first, then you understand. So,
do you see God moving at all in this situation?
I think people who don't even know whether there is a God, they are saying, why God? Mm-hmm. Why is it this is happening? And they put the word God in his name is included. But you find out that, oh, these people don't even know that there's a God. But in their statement, as they are mourning, they involve him. People are going to start to realize more that there is a God, and he knows exactly what is going on. And when it's time for him to stop it, you'll be like shocked, be like, oh, we had coronavirus a few years ago. You know, like how people are talking about the 1918 influenza. It happened, and they said five million people died or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more than 5 million. I think it was a huge, huge death toll from the Spanish flu.
Yeah, in a way, God has allowed it. I think he's allowed it so that we will know that there is a God. Because everybody's like, a lot of people are like, oh God, you know, that the way we say, oh God, they are saying it, and then they start crying. And you know, like us Africans, we mourn, we hold our heads, and we cry. And then they're saying, God, God in our language is called Mwari, like Mwari, what, and all that. So I think most people are starting to sit down and think. You hear when you talk to people, they're starting to put Bible verses in our conversations, and you'll be like, oh, okay, somebody's been reading a Bible.
Right. But thank you so much, Chennai. Bless you.
You are welcome.
The next conversation you're about to hear, I recorded on the same day as Chennai, Wednesday the 15th, and it's a conversation with Latifa Alatas, who is an incredible musical artist. And she's also incredibly prolific. She has created work with a number of different bands, The Autumn Film, Solo Me, for example. She's also released two solo albums under the name Moda Spira, and I urge you to track those down. If you haven't heard them already, they are just painfully beautiful sort of meditations on love and loss. But the way that I came to know about Latifa was through Page CXVI. Page CXVI is a musical project that she started a while ago, and the idea behind that project is to reinterpret hymns. Yeah, it was such a privilege to sit down with Latifa via the means of Zoom, and catch up with her.
Latifa, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
It's great to have you here. So, first of all, you're based in Nashville, Tennessee. Is that right?
That is correct. I moved here about a year and a half ago from Colorado.
Right. So tell me, what's the situation like in Nashville at the moment in terms of lockdown?
You know, I think we're on day 30 I'm on day 30 of self-quarantining, and the city and state, I think, is rounding 2 weeks now. It's very odd. I mean, I think overall, as far as COVID-19 goes, we have not as many cases as other cities in America, and people seem to be observing the stay-at-home order, which I think is really positive. So it's just strange. I mean, in one way, it's nice. All my neighbors are home all the time and people wave and talk to each other. But it definitely is odd that I'm not seeing as many of my friends as I'm normally seeing. I think Nashville in particular has had a bit of a hard go because the tornado hit about 2 weeks before COVID started becoming a really big issue here. And so the city has been under pretty tremendous devastation physically. And so it's just kind of like two things right in a row has been pretty hard. But I feel like the city in general is bounding together and people are trying to help one another out, which has been really cool to see. But I think it'll be fascinating to kind of see how this plays out in the world in general, you know, over the next 6 months. How are things over where you're at?
Yeah, it's kind of, I think we're at our peak at the moment in terms of cases.
Okay.
So that's what a lot of people are saying. So I guess we're on the kind of the highest level of lockdown at the moment. Okay. Yeah, it's strange. I think people are, I mean, I'm just amazed by the goodness of humanity at times like this. You know, yeah. you can focus on the negative stories and the stories of people filing and, manipulating people and kind of trying to make some money out of this situation.
Right.
But actually, I'm choosing more to focus on the really positive stories that I see in my community of people banding together, buying groceries for people who are, vulnerable, isolating, finding ways to do church differently and thinking about how we do sort of community and church in this time. Something I've found is that suddenly geography doesn't really make a difference at all. So you can be a long way from someone. You know, we're having this conversation now, and you know, it's kind of in a way it's a chance to bring people together. So I think we've found that with our church community as well, that we're able to gather people into a Bible study, say, and have a chat about Jesus and the gospel, which maybe would be more practically difficult if stuff had carried on as before. But it's it's a hard time, I think, and it's just a strange moment that we're living through.
It really is a strange moment.
we've just had Easter. I'm interested. What was Easter in quarantine like for you?
So I've got three flatmates with me right now because of quarantine. I have a few friends who live by themselves, and we decided instead of all living alone, we should live together.
Good idea.
Yeah, which has been really good. So we have two dogs and four humans. but honestly, it was really rainy outside. It was a massive thunderstorm the majority of the day here in Nashville. So you couldn't even get outside and walk. But we really just kind of spent the day eating food, being together. We laughed a lot. We talked about, passive trauma, all the exciting things.
Yeah.
But it was really just a day of slowness and being together and eating food and being around the table, which in some ways I think made it my favorite Easter ever. You know, it wasn't about anything else but communing with one another. And that's usually my favorite kind of time in general, you know. And one of the guys here actually is a music director at a church. So in the morning he did a Zoom church service with his church and led music. So I heard a bunch of that. But it's been a little challenging for me to I think it's sort of interesting. I don't mean this in a critical way at all, though. I love that people are still wanting to gather together to worship. But I think, man, if this is long term, I think we're going to have to reinvent how we're doing it, you know, and instead of just trying to do what we did when we were all physically together, I think there's going to need to be some sort of reevaluation of how we gather and how we connect. Because I'm so grateful for obviously the internet and video and all this stuff, because we can all talk to one another and see each other's faces, and that's beautiful. But there is something about just being with people and gathering together, you know? And so part of me is I kind of go by the theory that we should all be quarantining in very small, little cell groups, you know, and everybody kind of agrees to only see those certain people.
Right.
So that you can actually have human interaction. Cause like one of my biggest concerns has been for my single friends who live by themselves. Mm. And that kind of physical isolation for a really long time, it just isn't mentally, physically, emotionally healthy for anyone. Like there's a reason why babies need to be held a lot immediately for like, you know, when they're just laying there and they can't be left alone. Otherwise it kind of like develops issues for them long-term. And I think that that same thing can happen to us even as grownups, you know? And so I think there's something about being together and still observing the stay-at-home order, because that's very, very important. But like, depending on how long this lasts, like, what are we doing? Because that's like a new kind of most vulnerable in some ways, you know, depression and isolation. It can really lead people to like a negative, dark spiral in their lives. And there's something about being with a friend and like really physically being with a friend and sitting next to them that, I mean, honestly, if we're going to talk about Easter, I mean, that's like what makes like Jesus so amazing, is that the physical nearness of God on the planet to be with people is such a huge gesture and symbol of God's compassion and love, the idea of physically being together. And so it's just something to think about, I think. I don't have all the answers. It's just something I'm kind of musing over.
Yeah. Are you finding that you're being much more kind of intentional with your housemates and actually getting to know them a lot better during this time?
Yeah. I mean, we've gone really deep and it's been really beautiful, and they're really, really kind people, and everyone's really going out of their way to be helpful, and everyone's sharing, and everyone's being respectful and observant of one another. And I think, you know, it's just a really sensitive time. And so I have a lot of grace for like myself or anybody else that's having like an emotional reaction that might be out of turn. But in general, I think we've all been much quicker to extend grace to one another, because the climate of the world is just harder right now, you know, and we just need a little extra grace for one another.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you've sort of learned about following Jesus through this? So has it been a month for you, pretty much? So
yes, it's been 30 days yesterday. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's quite a big milestone then, isn't it? 30 days. That's a long time. Have you learned anything about following Jesus during those 30 days?
I think that I've been learning a lot about the practice of being still and slowness. And I've thought a lot about, like, it seems to me that Jesus was a bit of an introvert, you know, if we look at Jesus's life.
He's always going up the mountain, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And
we have this personal space.
Yeah. And, you know, I have been an extrovert my whole life. And so, you know, the world shifting this way, you know, for a long time, the world has kind of bent towards extroverts. I think it's been in the favor of extroverted people. And now introverts are sort of getting their heyday in some way, you know, like, oh, I could just get all this time and all this space. And I think there's a lot to learn in that. And, you know, Jesus practiced a lot of, like you said, he went up the mountain a lot. He practiced a lot of stillness, I think, being alone, communion with God. And I think it's sort of forced me into a more similar regimen. I've just been spending more time outside, more time in observance, more time in like meditative prayer and stillness. And it's actually been really nice. Like I've discovered a different kind of peacefulness that I haven't maybe learned before. Just because I can get so distracted with all the things I have to do that day, or all the people I'm going to see, or all the records I want to work on, or any of those things. And, you know, I don't know how you felt, but like my creative impulses have kind of been waxing and waning throughout this time. Like I'll have like a surge of creativity and then I'll sit at the piano and in 10 minutes feel exhausted. And I think it's just, it's hard when there's so much going on to do a lot of output, at least for me. And so just like letting that be okay, you know, and taking that time instead to be slow and be still and look at the trees and listen to the birds. I don't know. I think that Jesus communed with nature a lot. And because I think nature is such a reflection of God's majesty and goodness, you know? And so being outside, it's been a bit cold this week, but we've had really nice weather overall. And so just being outside so much, I think has been like a good reminder for me that, you know, as this passes and changes, and hopefully as we get back to more of a like normative routine, I don't want to let go of that kind of time. You know, I think it's good for my soul.
Oh, absolutely. Do you have a garden where you are?
You know, I had a garden that I loved and worked so hard on in Colorado, but I haven't built my garden here yet, because I've been observing my property for a year, trying to figure out the sun patterns. And right. That's like the advice. So I have like a few pots that I do tomatoes and herbs and that kind of stuff in, but like I had like 9 beds and was growing all my vegetables for 4 or 5 months to eat off of, you know, at a time back in the day. And so I was going to start building on my beds and stuff this year, but I just felt like with observing stay at home when it was all happening, I didn't really want to go out. It didn't feel essential. It just felt like a bonus item. And so I'm going to plant some flowers, and I'm going to plant some tomatoes and some hardy lettuces and squashes. Actually, when May starts, because that's what everyone tells me out here, that the quote unquote freezes are over, although it hasn't really frozen here yet. So,
fair play. Yeah, I think I've become aware of things like birds and shadows, and trees, and you know the breeze, and just all these things that you know they've always been there, obviously. But I think life is just so busy, isn't it? And
we can get
so distracted by things that actually are in the grand scheme of nature very insignificant, but
yes,
seem very significant, and we make them very significant. We maybe, you know, idolize certain things and build them up to be these kind of key parts of life. And I think just this stripping away of all of that stuff has been, for me, probably the greatest blessing of this time, is just being able to sit in the garden and, you know, worship God and sit in His creation. And I didn't do that like a year ago. That wasn't part of my routine. It's kind of forced me into that.
I love
what you're saying about trying to get kind of rhythms going now that then will continue after this pandemic.
I hope so.
Yeah. Oh man. Have there been any kind of good rhythms that you've felt, you know, getting into that have helped you with this?
Yeah. I mean, I think the practice of being still outside and having kind of contemplative meditative prayer time has been really powerful for me. And then the act of walking for like an hour every day. I have a dog, so I usually take walks, but I usually maybe do 20, 30 minute walks. But there's something about just taking your time and strolling, like not doing the walking for exercise, but doing it for, it's sort of like a more like a moving meditation, you know? I think that those two things I really want to keep, because I think there is something even scientifically about the way our like limbic system and our brain works, that when our right and left sides of our body are engaged in motion or movement, that certain ideas that we're meditating on can be grooved into more permanent neural pathways in our brain, which basically means that in stressful situations, the deeper the neural pathway that we're grooving. So let's say I'm grooving the idea that God is good because I see God in the trees and hear God in the birds and feel God in the breeze. Like those are some of the things I observe, right, when I'm walking. So if I'm thinking those things and I'm walking, that idea, that actual rhythm with my body is creating, if you will, like a path in my brain that my feet keep walking over and over again, and they're kind of grooving this path. And the more I walk over it, the more permanent that path becomes. And so when I get in situations where all of a sudden I'm experiencing stress or trauma, and my instinct is God good? Is God trustworthy? Where is God? Those deeper paths that I've grooved with God is good, God is near, I feel God, I hear God. The deeper those are, the less stressed I'm going to be, because instead of just like jumping to, can I trust God? I'll think, no, I remember this. I remember this. I know that God is good, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely.
And so I think that like those practices in particular are things I don't really want to let go of. I was sort of doing them half-heartedly, I think, before quarantine. So they weren't brand new practices for me, but they weren't everyday practices for me. And there is something about like daily observance, which I think has been particularly powerful for me.
Absolutely. You create music under the name Modispiro, which in Latin means the continual act of breathing. And I wonder whether there's something in that almost of you know, we can get terrified about this pandemic and think, you know, this could last months, it could last years. But actually, if you take it back to day by day, even breath by breath, step by step, maybe it becomes more manageable, and maybe you can actually get through it with joy, not with kind of fear constantly.
Well, I mean, you think about what it says when God says, like, don't worry, don't fear. Like, don't you see? Like, don't you see that I take care of like the flowers in the field and the birds in the trees? Mm. And I think part of that is the flower. If you really look at nature and you spend a lot of time, like the flowers in the fields and the birds in the trees, like I believe that they're just living moment to moment, like in the present. You know, like I'm sure that they all, like birds in particular, right? They might make some plans, like they're gonna go hunting and find worms and feed their young and all those kinds of things. But it's not like they don't seem to be worried. You know, and everything dies and everything, like, in some ways is reborn in the sense where, like, at least in nature, right? Like, you see cycles and patterns of death and resurrection everywhere. And that's what this past weekend was about as well, right? The ultimate symbol and like of death and resurrection in Jesus and then Christ. And I think that we get so concerned about our ending that we miss what's going on right now. And fear really is the real joy robber. It really kills and sucks out what we can be experiencing in the moment. And the truth is, you know, we're all going to die and there's going to be something next. And I don't know exactly what that's going to be, but like, I see that pattern in nature and I've seen that pattern in God. And so I'm just trusting that like, there's something next for me too. And I don't mean this to sound as morbid as it sounds, but like that brings me a lot of like peace. Like I don't have to worry. Like even if the worst thing that happens, quote unquote, is, you know, I'm not here tomorrow. Well, I don't know if that's really that bad. I think that might be more worse for my friends and my dog that are left behind.
Wow, I love what you're saying. That's beautiful. Has God spoken to you specifically through any scripture over the last week or so?
This is gonna sound so weird, and I swear it's not a cop out. I've been thinking a lot about the verse that Jesus wept. I've been thinking a lot about the people that are hurting and experiencing a tremendous amount of grief currently. And how even the phrase "God is good" could feel like a slap in the face to somebody who's suffering, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea that God really grieves with us is so significant. And it's one of the reasons why I changed the lines in "Great Is Thy Faithfulness" that came out a few weeks ago on the new record for the Page Record. Like, I changed it instead of. What's the original verse? It's something about like, oh, everything I've needed, your hand hath provided. Like, it's not that I'm against that idea, but it felt like a hard thing to explain to somebody who's experiencing trauma or suffering in an acute moment. So instead I rewrote it to, amidst the pain of this world, you grieve with us. And it ends with, that God is drawing so near, so near, that God is with us in our suffering and our pain, because it's God's presence is the provision. I think we confuse provision a lot with like physical manifestation of things that we need. And those are real things that we do need. I'm not underplaying that, but I just don't think that's like how the world works a lot. And so the idea that God's nearness dwelling with us is something that we can rely on consistently is really hopeful for me. And so the idea that Jesus wept, like I just think about my friends who have lost their job, or are worried about what's coming next, or friends who have gotten sick. It's one of those things where I'm like, I'm just glad that God is with us in this, that God doesn't leave us in this. And I love that Jesus, you know, Jesus could have just given everybody an answer, right? When Lazarus died, like, well, no, I'm going to raise him from the dead. It's going to be fine. Like, you don't need to be upset. But like, God doesn't do that. God knows that we're humans and knows that our emotion needs to move through us and move through our body. And that's an essential part of how we process. And so like, God is patient with us in our process and experiences it with us. And to me, that's such a tender picture. Like, my favorite friends are the friends that don't give me all the answers, but just sit with me, you know? Yeah. And so I think I've been honestly thinking about that a lot.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Latifa, for your time.
Thanks, Sam. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
This next conversation was recorded on Saturday, the 18th of April, and it's with Kat Rea, another brilliant musical artist. Kat Rea started singing backing vocals for local artists and churches when she was just 12, and she's been gigging and writing music ever since. She recently released a single called Freedom Rain, which is a really great track, and she's, as you'll hear in this interview, releasing new music in just a few weeks as well. So yeah, really great to catch up with Kat about what she's learning in this moment.
And it's my great pleasure to be joined by Kat Rea. Kat, hello, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm good, thank you, Sam. Very good.
We're living through a strange time at the moment. I just want to ask you, what have you been learning about following Jesus through this pandemic?
Yeah, well, like you said, it is very strange, and I feel like it just came out of nowhere. It was like, you know, those talks of this COVID over in Europe and stuff, and then all of a sudden we're in lockdown, and then life has totally changed. So I've been learning a lot. So actually, I'm looking to the blessings in this, because it's really slowed my life down. I was the type of person who'd like just had like, you know, so many things to do in the day and got up and just got on with them and tick boxes. And so being forced to kind of slow down and not go anywhere, you know, it's really pressed me into like pushing me into the word, into, you know, seeking Jesus again, going back to the first love of the Father. And I think, you know, it's just been an absolute amazing journey so far. Just kind of going back to basics, I think, and kind of getting rid of things that just didn't need to be in my life, didn't need to, you know, kind of distractions. And so it's been a real cleansing time and a fine tuning of my relationship with Jesus and what it looks like without kind of church, as in, you know, still doing church in the house, but as in going to places and meetings and things like that. And really getting deeper with my relationship with Jesus. So it's been a real blessing.
Yeah. Have you found that lots of your plans for this year have just completely evaporated?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, just kind of cancelled the last three months of my diary and the stuff that I was going to do in August, like singing events and stuff. Just everything's just question marks. So, yeah, it's completely changed.
Yeah. Yeah, you talk about kind of pressing into the word. Have there been any scriptures that have been speaking to you, especially through this time?
Yeah, well, at the beginning of the year, I felt like God was asking me to study Revelation, which is always a big ask. you know, Revelation's quite a daunting kind of chapter because, you know, it's all prophetic and it talks about like the end times and things. So I've kind of been kind of going, okay, kind of avoiding it, but I've really been pressing into that and studying it and, yeah, just getting like an insight on, you know, what God talks about in Revelation and the seven churches and all of that kind of stuff. But one of the things that he's really been speaking to me, as I've mentioned, is getting back to the first love. And in Revelation, it talks about like one of the churches, he said, you know, you're missing the point kind of thing on, you know, doing church and doing kind of religion and getting into that, you know, the rhythms of stuff. And it's like what he's asking is us to get back to the first love. And so it's just like me and him, you know. That's really been speaking to me. And also a scripture in Timothy. It's 2 Timothy 21, and it says, those who cleanse themselves from the latter will be made instruments for special purposes, made holy and useful to the master, and prepared to do any good work. And that's really been like sticking to me, because I feel like this time has been a real cleansing for me in a personal way, of just kind of, yeah, like getting back to the roots of why, you know, why do I love Jesus? What do I love about Jesus? And also, I feel like it's a national thing as well. You know, we're definitely you know, the planet looks a lot better for us kind of stopping all of the transport and, you know, that kind of thing. And I just feel like it's been a whole cleansing and purging season. So yeah, that's been really speaking to me.
Was that process of going back to basics, was that quite simple, or did that take a few weeks to kind of get back into that mindset?
Yeah, a couple of weeks. You know, I kind of struggled the first two weeks of kind of slowing myself down, and you know, I was still kind of making myself busy, and I trying to sort out meetings, and I just kind of held my hands up, and I was like, right, what does this look like, God? You know, what do you want from me in the season? And just putting practical things in, like, you know, going for walks in the woods, which, you know, I'd do like maybe once a week or once a fortnight. And, you know, I've been doing that every day, just walking into the woods, into the middle of the woods, and kind of, you know, just sitting on a log and listening to nature. And I know it sounds like, but, you know, it's just really helped me to kind of get back, you know, in the stillness of everything, all of this craziness going on, just finding God in the stillness of nature. And it's just been really helpful putting that practice in. And also coming down on a morning, doing journaling before everyone's up, and, you know, doing Bible studies has really, really helped me as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just kind of doing those on purpose. It's got me back into that rhythm of, you know, really seeking God, and it's really helped me.
So before this, were you, things like walking in the woods and journaling, were you in those sort of practices before the pandemic?
I would say yes, but not as much as I'd like to have been. So it's really, you know, I would journal. You know, if I, you know, I had like 10, 15 minutes, I'd go to a coffee shop really, really quickly and just like grab a couple of minutes just to kind of have coffee. And, but that would be like once a week or, you know, once a fortnight. But now it's like every day, putting that rhythm in. And now I'm like getting up and I can't do anything without going to my journal and having my quiet times and things. So it's really, really been helpful.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's almost like there's this kind of enforced monasticism that's happening at the moment. You know, we're all in our homes and we haven't chosen to be here, but actually it has kind of put us into this place of intimacy, I believe, with God. And I think it's a real opportunity to listen to his voice. And I love what you're saying about nature as well. I just find that, yeah, I've become aware of my surroundings like never before, really.
Absolutely. I mean, I live in Epping Forest. Like,
oh, lovely.
I live in a flat near it. And, you know, I've never actually, I've lived there for like 4 or 5 months now, and I've never gone into the woods and just had a walk for the sake of having a walk in the woods. And just to kind of do that, you know, and just, you know, kind of opening my eyes to see what's in my hand and what's on my doorstep, and just, you know, counting my blessings. Instead of kind of like moving on to the next thing, and the next thing is been a real, you know, blessing for my whole life, just to kind of like say to God, you know, thank you, and worshiping him from that place of, oh yeah, actually look what you've put around me, look at who you put in my life. And it's, yeah, it's been a real good wake-up call.
Yeah. Definitely. And is all of that stuff informing your creativity at this moment?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, it really helps me to like walk out and like see nature. And the way I create is to, I'm an extrovert as well. So I like to be in busy places, and I like to see, you know, be in busy coffee shops and be around people. So that's been a bit of a struggle because obviously there's no one around. but actually just to kind of walk out, have big walks and let my mind kind of like detune to all the busyness and really kind of engage in nature has brought a different side of the creative process out, which, you know, I like to think of it all kind of being multifaceted. So, you know, normally my routine would be, you know, going into the city, sitting down, jotting a few words down, and recording a few melodies. But now I'm kind of writing different lyrics and, you know, from a different perspective because of the stillness and quietness that I'm going into. So it's been really good in that way, in that respect. So yeah. It's been really helpful.
Have you got any, I mean, I guess your plans are kind of up in the air to an extent, but can we look forward to anything coming out this year, later this year?
Well, hopefully. Well, actually, so through the power of internet and, you know, people having studios, recording studios at home, which is always a great thing, I've managed to produce my next single, which is called Stolen. And it comes out in 4 weeks' time. So we've managed to kind of record that during this COVID thing, which has been a struggle because it's been back and forth and things like that. But excited about the track. It's all about, you know, things being stolen from you in, you know, my personal journey. I felt like my identity had been stolen and things like that. So that's coming out in 4 weeks' time. So that's good news. And yeah, I've got a couple of festivals in August, September time, which, like I said, it's all up in the air. But hopefully if they go through, then I will be performing there. So
yeah,
we just have to sit and wait for kind of the government to say, give us a go ahead of it.
Absolutely. Well, that's very exciting to look forward to. Kat, thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate that.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
It's Friday the 24th of April, and in a few moments I'm going to call John Bell from the Iona community. Very excited to speak to John and hear what he has to say about following Jesus through this pandemic. For those who don't know, the Iona community is a dispersed Christian community working for peace and social justice, rebuilding of community and the renewal of worship. And John is a household name for many people. He often appears on Radio 4's Thought for the Day. He's a preacher, he's a hymn writer, he's a composer, lecturer, broadcaster. He is an ordained minister in the Church of Scotland, and he has travelled the world, really, talking about worship and the renewal of worship. I got in touch with John, and he I asked him if I could do a Zoom interview, and he sent me an absolutely hilarious email back explaining why his laptop might self-destruct if he were to download Zoom. So I'm going to call him, and hopefully this will work out. To start off with, you mentioned in your email that you've been cooking up some soups recently, and I'm always after a new recipe. So could you tell me a bit about those?
Well, the one which I like most is soup which you make with peanut butter.
Oh, very nice.
It's very nice. You know, it's like a kind of a spicy vegetable broth, and then you add peanut butter towards the end of it. I think it's kind of four big spoonfuls, depending on, of course, how much liquid there is in the pot. But it's great. It's great. And I'm trying to find, I once was in, got a recipe from a girl in America, which was mostly peanut butter and I don't know what else. But it's actually great. It's a great soup.
I would never think to put peanut butter in a soup.
Well, no, neither would I.
So, John, aside from soup, how are you finding this time, this lockdown?
Well, I find it better than I'd expected, and it's partly because I moved house 2 years ago, and I've never really made friends with my house. I work away sometimes up to 8 months or 9 months a year, so this was a place I came back to, you know, wash my clothes, get prepared for the next thing, went away. And because I'm at home, I've been able to do a whole lot of things that I would never have done any other time. I've dug a garden. I've never dug a garden since I was 18. I got rid of red chips and then began to, you know, plant some potatoes and some flowers. I've revised quite a lot of work which needed done, and have talked to people. I mean, I've spoken. I live in a Glasgow tenement, ground floor. There are 9 houses above me, and I reckon that I've spoken to 4 out of the 9 occupants above me who've never spoken before. So this has been a great thing in some ways for me, you know. to be in one place and to do the kind of things which I've always wanted to do, but I've never been able to because I've been busy elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. It is interesting, isn't it, how it's bringing people together, even as we're all isolating in our homes, where there's this kind of shared sort of understanding of what's happening. And it's interesting how communities are sort of springing up out of that.
Well, it's the potential that people have for goodness and for friendship, which, you know, in normal society, if you might call it that, is prohibited because we're either doing or we're acquiring, but what we're not is being. And that whole thing about being present to yourself and being present to other people and being present to God in a different way, it allows for, I think, the potential for good and for kindness to flourish.
Are you learning anything in particular about following Jesus through this?
Well, there's somebody, a guy in Germany, a pastor in Germany, a young guy, he wrote and said, what would Jesus do at this time? And that was a very interesting question to ask. You know, would Jesus observe the limits, keep back from people, who say kind of pleasant things? Well, what would he do? Now, I tend to think that the pandemic would not be a worry for Jesus because he touched people and was touched by people who were deemed to be either disreputable or infectious. And the love of God doesn't see any limits there. Now, that's not to say that everybody who's a priest or a minister or a friend should break the limits, but I think that if we believe that Jesus has entered into total solidarity with humanity, then in this situation, he would do what was necessary to enable people to know that he loved them. I think also that I have this, for a long time, a conviction that Jesus' spirituality was fueled by his knowledge of Hebrew scripture, and particularly the Psalms. And most people are kind of reticent, you know, when you come to Psalms to go any further than Psalm 23 or Psalm 121, particularly in times of trouble. And actually, the Psalms have within them an incredible vocabulary for pain, which Jesus knew about. So on the cross, he says, you know, he quotes, my God, why are you forsaking me? And elsewhere, you find words which allude to that which is in his heart, because he knows these Psalms. He probably knows them by heart. Many Jewish rabbis did. And one of the things which I find at the moment is that when I always think that when I read the Psalms, I read them in the company of Jesus, because, okay, they're in our language, but they were in his language originally, and the sentiment is transferred. And that when you come across a psalm which asks, my God, will you forsake me? Or how long, O Lord, will you turn your back from me? Then if I feel that myself, this has been articulated in a way which God has endorsed. If I don't feel that, this might take me into a ward where there are people who fear they're going to die because they're in ventilators or they're having to take in oxygen. And that sense of despair which echoes through the psalms enables me to pray more intimately or more intelligently for them, because other people have been in these situations before, and Jesus has endorsed these words.
Yeah, something I love about your music and your hymns is the space that they allow for pain and for sadness. Do you think in the church that we've almost lost the ability to lament with God?
Oh yes, I think it's a kind of fake. Well, it's got a free understanding of God. It's as if God will be upset if we feel within ourselves any upset or anger. And that to be a good Christian means that we always have to implicitly be 99.9% on top of the world and, you know, keep it happy. But that's a kind of odd God, because that God doesn't show that to those who've been gifted with intimacy with him in the scriptures, that that's the way they live. I mean, who in the Bible got it easy? Who in the Bible didn't have to deal with getting locked up in prison? Well, there's, you know, Paul and Jeremiah and a whole host of other people. And some people, you know, Job's a record of a man who lost a great deal. Okay, it's a poem, but it's a record of somebody for whom suddenly all the light has turned to darkness. There's nobody whom God calls who gets it easy. And I think that maturity in faith has been able to accept that this is the given. We live in a world which is full of risk. It will from time to time affect us. And faith is not some kind of insurance policy or protective against that. Faith is what gets us through it, believing that there's a bigger purpose, that there's a future ahead of us, and that God will not depart from us.
Are you finding through this time that any particular practices or rhythms with God are useful?
Well, I have a fairly, when I say disciplined prayer life, I always pray first thing in the morning. And I've spent a little longer, I think, pondering on the Psalms and the Gospels than I would normally do. But I'm also reading the Book of Job. When this, you know, kind of saying the lockdown began, I thought, you know, people are reading Albert Camus' The Plague and stuff like that. So the Bible's a very good this book of Job, where he doesn't understand why these things are happening, and presuming it to be by the hand of God. And he's got people who are kind of either telling him not to doubt, or who are saying, well, you know, if you had like a better life, you would be in the state that you're in. And I find that an interesting book. And it's maybe because, you know, at the moment I'm very healthy. I have very good friends. We correspond regularly. I'm able to get out on a bike and go shopping. And the Book of Job, like the Psalms, takes us into where other people might be and encourages empathy. Mm. And also, you know, dealing with the fact that not all the nice, theologically astute answers work. They don't always.
Yeah, and there's a place just for sitting with people in pain.
And there's a place where you sit with people. And one of the things which I love about the Psalms, and it wasn't me who discovered this, it was a very poor woman from the north of Glasgow. You get these Psalms that ask God questions, and the reason why you ask God questions is because you believe that somebody's listening.
Mm.
It's not because you expect an instant answer, but you really want the other, whether that's a friend or God, you really want somebody to listen to what in your heart cries out to be responded to. Yeah, so that's kind of where I go. I mean, I don't dwell in darkness and I don't feel depressed or any of that, but I do think that empathy is part of being a human being, and what enables us to be empathetic increases our humanity.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John. Really appreciate your time and willingness to talk.
Pleasure.
And that's the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for listening and for giving this the time of day. I really do appreciate that. And, you know, as it's a new podcast, I would also really appreciate it if you could pass this on to someone else, maybe share it on social media. And if you haven't already, please do subscribe so that you get episodes delivered into whatever directory you are listening to. Great. Well, thank you as well to Chennai and to Latifa and Kat and John for coming on the podcast. As always, thank you to Johnny Davies for the theme music and to my brother Thomas Thurgood for the jingles. I was just reflecting that the day that this is going out, the 1st of May, was the day that I originally had planned to start a pilgrimage with some friends from church. We were going to be starting the Camino de Santiago on the 1st of May, and that obviously isn't happening anymore. But our plan was to walk through Portugal into Spain and end up in Santiago de Compostela in northwest Spain, where some people believe that the remains of St. James are buried. And just as I was sort of thinking about the idea of pilgrimage and sort of what that means, I came across this quote, which I'm gonna end the podcast with, because I think it's an interesting reflection in our current moment. It's from a guy called Kevin A. Codd. Good name. And he's a Roman Catholic priest, and he's written a fair bit about the Camino de Santiago. He's done it a few times, and this is one of his reflections. I hear a swelling swoosh. From the south, a bullet train whizzes into view on the tracks, knives through the landscape in a matter of moments, then disappears with a whoosh. It has just covered in a few seconds what has taken me hours to walk. That very fast train reminds me that, as a pilgrim, travel is made holy in its slowness. I see things that neither the passengers of the train nor the drivers of the automobiles see. I feel things that they will never feel. I have time to ponder, imagine, daydream. I tire. I thirst. In my slow walking, I find me.